This is Pat Tomlinson, and I'm talking today with Delk Crozier, Maximum Farming Implementation Specialist with Ag Spectrum. Delk is at his farm in southwest Ohio near West Alexandria. Delk has over 30 years of experience with the Maximum Farming system, both as a grower and as an associate. In addition, he also travels throughout the Midwest and beyond to help support growers and associates with the challenges they may encounter as they implement the Maximum Farming system in their own operation. Delk, we're in the middle of the cash crop growing season now, and I thought this might be a good time to talk a little about cover crops. Last year's cover crops have been replaced with corn and soybeans, and the 2023 harvest and cover crop planting season is still ahead of us. Over recent years, we've seen a significant growth in the use of cover crops throughout the Midwest, and many farmers are still in the learning process with regard to if and how they can best integrate them into their operations for the variety of benefits they bring, things like weed control, erosion control, nutrient efficiency, and soil health, as well as some direct economic incentives through government and market programs. But we've seen a very dry spring and early summer. The moisture stress in fields seems to have magnified a lot of management practices, either for better or worse. And looking at some of the social media platforms and ag-oriented websites where farmers post, it's easy to find those who think that cover crops have been a negative to their 2023 cash crop, and also easy to find those who feel their 2023 cash crop has been significantly benefited by the cover crop in front of it. I know you have a lot of experience using cover crops on your own farm, and you also talk with growers over a wide geography. What are your general thoughts on cover crop adoption and the 2023 experience?
I think the biggest thing for me, why I do it, why I started looking at it, why it's important to me. The very first thing is just soil erosion, soil degradation. I'm concerned about that. I've been a no-till for almost 30 years. Everything we do out there has an effect on the soil, either good or bad. When you look at it that way, what's the number one thing I could do for that soil to prevent erosion and to increase the amount of organic compound I can leave in that soil for the next crop? To me, that's a cover crop. I mean, the longer you can grow a root in the soil and have biological activity in that soil, the more months out of the year, the better the quality of that soil is going to become quicker. That's just the long and the short of it. And so for me, once I understood that and understood that everything I do out there has an impact, either positively or negatively, that really got my mind to rolling around the idea of, one, I need to do something that increases the organic compound in my soil. Two, I need to stop erosion. Cover crops for me has been significant in stopping water flow, managing water flow. I've not been in this a long time, but I've got 6 years of cover crops on every acre every year. I think it's important when you get into cover crops, you start out with something simple, or you start conservatively so that your experience is manageable. And that keeps you from having a bad experience and just throwing up your hands and saying, I quit, I'm not doing cover crop anymore, it's not worth it. For me, it wasn't an option to fail at it. I was going to start with the most simplest thing, and for me, that's cereal rye. There's a lot of guys that go to annual rye first. Cereal rye is one of the easiest cover crops to kill. It's one of the easiest to manage. It has a very significant impact on slowing down the water and also managing the water entry into the soil. I've actually used it to prevent putting waterways in my farms. We use a sunflower tool and we put an air seeder on it with splash pads to seed every fall. We cross every acre corn and bean ground with it. We sow 40 pounds to the acre of cereal rye. We do every ravine in the field across the field. We run lengthways with that ravine. So we put 40 pounds down there and then we cross and do the whole field again. So all the ravines basically have 80 pounds. And so what that does is that slows and stops all the water flow to a minimum. And it's literally prevented me from right to the line fence of property. It's prevented me from putting waterways in. My soil and my ravines stay high. And as soon as it hits the neighbor's property, it drops 1, 2, 3 feet, and they have to put waterways in. It's huge in managing your soil erosion. To me, it's simple. From the aspect that I can leave it grow and plant green, or I don't have to and I can kill it in soybeans. Now in corn, very important with cereal rye and annual rye that you kill that crop 2 to 3 weeks ahead, depending on the size of it. to eliminate the allopathic effect. That's very important. Some guys don't pay any attention to that at all, and it's going to bite them. It hurts you every year. It's a guarantee. And so if you have the idea that you can plant green into cereal rye or annual rye with corn and get away with it, you can't. There's a mindset that goes along with cover crops that the number one thing we don't want to do is hurt our main crop, right? We have to understand a certain amount about cover crops to make sure that we don't injure or damage or cause delay in planting.
Can you tell us a little about how you time the termination process?
We always spray 2 to 3 weeks ahead. We're looking to be in that 9 to 18 inch growth. So at a 9 inch cover crop, I spray 2 weeks ahead to kill it before planting corn. And 18 inch, I spray 3 weeks ahead. If you're spraying a 9 inch cover crop of 40 pounds of the acre of cereal rye, you've grown a root in the soil, you've managed erosion, you're adding organic compound to that soil, and at 9 inches, you don't have a huge mat out there to worry about holding a lot of moisture, and you've gained the benefit. And so there's so many benefits to it. But it has to be managed, and if it's not managed correctly, it's going to bite you. And it's not a perfect world either, because what happens is every year is different. You know, in the last 6 years, 1 year of that six, I've kind of mismanaged my spring spraying, but I've learned from that, and so it causes you a different level of management when you're doing cover crops. Take that very seriously and be on it.
Do the conditions in a specific year often cause you to have to make some changes to those general plans you outlined in 2023 or recent years, for example? Have you had to make any adjustments based on the conditions in the spring?
Not this year, but the last 3 years we have had extremely wet, extremely cold planting conditions. Now, this year was cool and it was damp, but it was not the saturation of just waterlogged soil. It was like the 3 years previous. So the 3 years previous was a little bit harder to manage. Our cover crops didn't get as big as we wanted, and we sprayed them early, but we didn't have to worry about having that mat out there, and I think that's important to manage. This year, we sprayed first week of April. We killed it. The end of April was the first chance we had to plant. We planted some corn there. Everything went great. I think a mindset you have to be careful of is that I'm going to let that cover crop grow 2 to 3 foot tall, and I'm going to get the maximum benefit I can. Cereal rye and annual rye, once you hit 18 inches, that's the maximum benefit above ground and below ground root to shoot mass ratio that you want. So anything above 18 inches, it's not. One, annual rye is extremely hard to kill after that height, and the mat is very thick.
So it sounds like you really want to time the termination more based on the cover crop size than the time remaining until when you're hoping to plant.
That's exactly right. If you manage it that way, at least for the first few years, that will give you the opportunity to not become frustrated to the point where you just don't think it's worth it. The nice thing about cereal rye, annual rye, and some of those, especially just cereal rye, just take cereal rye in general, there's about 50 to 75% more mass below ground than there is above ground. So if you've got a ton of green foliage above ground per acre, you've got a ton and a half to ton and three quarters below ground. And that's the root mass below ground is what you're driving for. It's not the mass above ground. Mm-hmm. The mass above ground is the result of what's happening below ground. So what we're really growing cover crop for is your root mass below ground and how much root mass you can leave there in that soil profile, because that's where your biological activity happens. So that's the important part of it. That's the bang for the buck. And I think we forget that with cover crops and focus on, well, what's it look like above ground and how big is it and how lush is it? We think that has to happen. The important part is still going on below ground.
Well, hopefully that's a mindset that's easy for the maximum farming growers to embrace. After all, we don't carry spades into the corn and soybean fields just to have something to lean on. We know that the roots can tell us more about the crop sometimes than what we see above ground. It sounds like that same focus on roots can help us in terms of cover crop termination also.
That's right. The reward for growing roots 10 months out of the year instead of 5 or 6 months out of the year is incredible. You look out there and you think, well, I've only got 2 or 3 inches of green cover growing above ground. But what you don't understand is there's a lot more in that below ground. And that's what's really holding your soil intact. It takes so little green foliage or vegetation above ground to slow that water down, to allow water entry, because the roots are doing the biggest part of the work below ground. And so you don't always look there in January and February and think, I've just got a green, lush field that just looks wonderful. That's not always the case. What's growing below ground still gives you the benefit you want. As early spring warms up and we get spring rains, and the more you feed it, the quicker and the bigger mass you're going to get. But I think you have to be careful with that too, because you can get too much rank growth in the spring and that can hurt you too. So,
do you have any thoughts on the different species of cover crops out there, Dilk? I know cereal rye is probably the most common thing to start out with and probably to continue to use, but I didn't know if there were any impressions on what we saw with other species.
I've had cereal rye 6 years on every acre, and I don't have experience with anything else besides the rye grasses. I did a lot of research. I managed to have good people on my team that I could ask and trust their opinion on cover crops that had a lot of experience. And I basically took their direction and said, what's the simplest, easiest crop I can start with that manages soil erosion, that gives me the most water entry, that is the easiest to kill, and that is really the easiest, biggest bang for the buck? And I had a lot of good advice that cereal rye was just the best and simplest and easiest place to start. And honestly, once I started and seen what it was doing for me and learned how to manage it, that's why I've stayed with it and probably will continue to just stay with that, because there's a lot of flexibility with cereal rye. You just have to manage when you kill it on going to corn, and so, and it does the job year in and year out. So
that's a pretty good endorsement of cereal rye coming from a guy with 6 years of cover crop experience on every acre. One of the other issues I've actually been a little surprised by was the feelings by some growers that the cover crops tended to dry out their soils more than in non-cover crop fields. And I guess maybe I've thought about it too simplistically, in that if we had a wet spring, I'd expect that we'd hear a lot of issues from farmers feeling the cover crop acres were difficult to dry out with the cover and the shade on the soil. And certainly in a lot of situations this year, guys did feel the cover crops helped preserve moisture for their cash crop. Can you help me make sense of the varying experiences with the impact of cover crops in a dry spring?
That's a great point, great question. And it's somewhat multifaceted because of the growing year that you're having. But, you know, cover crops aren't a surefire thing, just like planting a corn and soybean crop is not a surefire thing every spring. We have to deal with the weather that we're given. I think you just have to use your best guess based off of what you can understand about the weather pattern you're starting to have that year. Cover crops can dry soil out. A green, lush cover crop that's growing will pull more moisture out of that soil than killing it and leaving a thick mat on top and thinking that it's going to dry down. And that's one of the things I'm talking about with overfeeding a cover crop. You get too much mass above ground, and making sure you spray that cover crop early enough that you don't get rank growth laying dead on top of the ground to keep it from drying out in a wet year. So you have to kind of make your best guess. And part of that just starts in February, March. You start watching your weather. If you're dry the whole month of March and your outlook on weather is to be dry through the planting season, I'd be killing the cover crop in the end of March and not letting that wick soil. And some of this is a shoot from the hip, and you might strike it and you might miss it a little bit, but it's up to us when you're growing a cover crop to manage how much moisture that cover crop was pulling out of that soil. And if you're in a drought condition in a drought area and your March is dry, I wouldn't let my cover crop grow. I'd kill it. If it's wet and it's growing good, and when that cover crop gets to that 9-10 inches, I'd be killing it so that you don't have a big mat out there if you're heading into more of a wet planting season. There's no surefire way of getting this thing right every year. You just have to make a best laid plan for what you think is right that year and go with it. And like I said, one season out of the last six, I didn't get it quite right. And I think it delayed my planting probably a week. That was 1 year out of six. It was a week I had to wait. Honestly, I don't think it hurt me that year a bit. Might have even helped me because it pushed the planting date to where the soils were a little warmer. And when I planted, everything come up and caught up and passed the stuff that had been planted earlier anyway. So you just don't always know the right thing when you're doing it sometimes.
Yeah, I guess when we hear the question about the impact of cover crops on how soils dry in the spring, we may need to think about the question as much as we do the answer. And I guess I mean that most types of general practices can have so many variables with respect to implementation that the results can vary pretty significantly also. For example, something very familiar to us would be in-row fertility. You can ask, does in-row fertility help corn yields? But we know there's no simple answer when you look at that on a broad-scale perspective. It's all about implementation. Is it a safe product for seedlings that's immediately available to the plant? Have you matched the rate to your soil test? Are you addressing micronutrient needs and taking advantage of the opportunity to promote microbial activity in the root zone? Are you matching your nitrogen program to your plant's needs? I've heard it said that a good agronomist almost always starts his answer to any question the same way. It depends. And that might be a good way to start out a discussion of the impact of cover crops on soil moisture in the spring also.
I agree. There's things that I do when I plant corn that I will never change because I know 20 years out of 20 years, they work every year. They give me benefit. And it's the same thing with cover crops. I'm not going to quit planting cover crops because I know that long term, it's exactly what my soil needs because I'm creating biological activity in that soil, you know, at least 10 months out of the year. And that is incredible for what it does for soil structure, building organic compound in the soil, you know, changing organic matter, changing your soil structure, saving soil erosion. I'm not going to live without it, so I've got to figure out how to make it work. And will it be perfect every year? Maybe not. But long term, biologically for the soil, I know it's the best. So I have to figure out how to manage it. And that it takes a little while. That's why I say start conservatively and manage that process so that you can continue to make it work and you don't become frustrated with it.
I think it's really impressive to hear the impact you've seen on fields that might need waterways if you weren't using cover crops to manage the water flow. To me, it almost brings to mind the tiling experience in that we can immediately see the benefits in some problem areas, but we end up improving soils and crop performance across the field when we tile, even in places we didn't think we had a problem. And it sounds like what you've experienced with cover crops on your fields is somewhat similar.
That's exactly right. Absolutely. You know, I've got a neighbor that was just a little bit cranky with me on my cover crops, and I did this 3 or 4 years beside him, and the next thing I know, he was putting a waterway in, and I decided to drive the perimeter of that field, and I didn't take a picture of it, I should have, but I drove past this at the line fence from my field with a cover crop the last 3 to 4 years, I forget what it was, 3 or 4, to his line fence on his side of the field. It was a 3-foot drop, cut a whole way this field. And he put a waterway in, and he came up to me that summer, and he said, you know, he said, I didn't think much of your cover crops. He said, I can't even believe the difference between your field and mine and the fact that you don't need a waterway, and I had to put a waterway in to even be able to cross it. And so, to me, I thought that was the best testimony of someone seeing it and to having to see it to believe it, you know.
Well, there's no question that sometimes those fence row, field-to-field comparisons between neighbors can be pretty powerful and open your eyes to the effectiveness of different practices.
Absolutely. And what it did for me was, is like, cover crops aren't perfect, but there is a management side of this that is doing exactly what I set out to do. It's accomplishing the goals that I wanted to with cover crop. And I'm not giving them up because that's my soil. I'm trying to change and add to it, not lose it.
Well, you've given us a lot of good detail to think about, Delk. Any more thoughts as we think about winding down?
I think you just have to make a personal decision and personal commitment to cover crops and say, I want to do something. Do your homework, do your research. And for me, I would just tell you, start with cereal rye, start with a manageable amount of acres, do something similar to what I'm doing with the tillage tool and accelerator from, I don't care what it is, some type of vertical tillage tool. put an air seeder on there. It allows a lot of flexibility. It gets it into the ground. There's other ways you can do it, but it gives you the ability to stop erosion, grow the roots, manage the top growth, keep it simple, start small and manageable until you kind of get a feel for what's right for you and your farming operation and the amount of acres you're wanting to do and the field you want to do it in. You know, take it from there.
I think one of the other key points you made that guys can benefit from is to be ready to terminate based on the size of the cover crop and not to focus just on the calendar. Don't assume more above ground growth will benefit you more. You've reached your goal for root growth and soil enrichment when your cereal rye is between 9 and 18 inches. Beyond that, you may just be increasing the chance for problems.
Cover crop is more about killing it when you know it's at the stage that you need to manage it at than it is saying, boy, I'd like to see 2 foot tall cover crop out there just waving green like wheat. You know, to me, that's the wrong approach. So you have to manage timeline on when you kill it. And if you do, there'll be a lot less frustration and you're going to see the benefit from it. And you're not going to damage or delay or cause any issues in your first crop that you're really trying to make the money with.
Well, I think we'll wrap up with that thought. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk today, Delk. You've shared some valuable insight from your experiences that can help us give our clients more effective leadership as they integrate cover cropping into their operations. I know with your travel schedule, you've always got a lot to do when you are home at the farm, so I really do appreciate your willingness to share some of your time with us today.
Well, thank you, Pat, for your time. I appreciate it.